with the things our kids are being exposed to today in the media and even in the schools, there's really a rape of our children's innocence. The solution is a Jesus revolution.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just posted a question on Facebook. I'd love to get your response to the question. Do some sex ed classes in our children's schools amount to a rape of our children's innocence? Or if that statement's too extreme for some, do they at least condone immorality? Michael Brown, so glad to be here with you today on the Line of Fire broadcast. Here's the number to call so you can weigh in. 1-866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH or 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire or weigh in on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. I want to tell you about something very deep that happened in my own heart. It was actually on Thanksgiving. And I've had this experience in prayer many a time with great intensity, with great passion. There are obviously things that we experience with God in our times alone with Him that are private and are to be kept private. There are other things that are to be spoken, that are to be shared, and this is one of them. A family was going to be coming over shortly after noon on Thanksgiving. I was up in the morning. Nancy and our daughters and one of our granddaughters were getting things together and starting to cook. No one else was in the house, so I had total free time. I had cleared my schedule from things I had to do, and I was on my face seeking the Lord in His presence. And I can't tell you how often this happens to me. I became overwhelmingly burdened with the need for radical Jesus revolution in the culture, in the society. Let me say this again for the 10,000th time. I'm not talking about a revolution of anger, hatred, violence, intimidation. God forbid. I'm talking about a Jesus revolution. I'm talking about the fact that Jesus did not come into the world to establish a lovely home and garden religion called Christianity. That Jesus himself came to inaugurate the kingdom of God in the earth. It will be fully in place when he returns in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who don't know God, and he establishes his kingdom on this earth, and the kingdoms of this world become the kingdom of our God. We await that time yet in the future. Yet right now, we are not called just to live a nice life, just to enjoy the blessings of God, just to enjoy the favor of God on our families and on our personal life or on our businesses or our careers. Thank God for those blessings, but that's not primarily while we're here. We are here to make a difference. Sometimes I feel this so intensely, I can't communicate in words what I feel. But what I do feel is my whole being, my whole call, my whole life exists for one purpose, and that is to bring Jesus revolution into the world. Well, what does it mean? It means a church revived. It means a church transformed. What does it mean? It means that transformed church impacting culture through preaching the gospel, through living right, through shining the light, through being a prophetic witness until the culture is shaken and changed. It means seeing this Jesus revolution spread to the nations, that dark places in the earth that don't know the Lord, that have never heard his name or that blaspheme his name will come into the light of the Messiah, and that the Jewish people, Israel itself, will turn to the Lord and be saved. It's quite a large vision, but I tell you, I exist for that purpose. I exist to make that difference in the earth, to be one of a large army of people devoted to making that difference. And I want to share my heart with you today about Jesus' revolution. I want to start, though, with some stark reality about what's happening in our children's schools and then talk about where the revolution has to start. 866-34-TRUTH.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My heart is stirred today, and I hope that some of the stirring in my heart will help stir a fresh flame in your heart. Friends, we can make a difference. Together with the Lord, we can make a difference. Together with the Lord, our lives can touch other lives, and those lives can be radically transformed. Oh, yeah, I want to see it all happen. I want to see everything change overnight. But that's not the way things do change. That's not the way it does happen. It's little by little. It's one life at a time. And then it almost looks like a sudden shift because momentum changes and things happen in dramatic ways. But it's day by day. It's one life at a time. Together with the Lord, empowered by His Spirit, lifting up Jesus, we can make a difference in the world. Don't throw in the towel of escapism, of hopelessness, of despair. We can make a difference. God is with us as we serve Him and honor Him. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Before I talk to you a bit more about this sex education issue in terms of our kids' schools and how I got onto that for today and then where we go with that subject in terms of Jesus' revolution, how it has to happen, how it has to work out in us and through us, I just want to mention to you that a Facebook friend, a gentleman that I actually know, not just someone that's a, quote, Facebook friend, pointed out that there was a page on Facebook where homosexual activists had put something together to say, okay, if we see something on Facebook that we take exception to, that we don't agree with, that we don't like, we're going to label it as hateful and obscene, and we're going to flag it enough that it'll get Facebook's attention and Facebook will pull it. And he warned me and some others about this and said we need to work together to combat this. Well, I got this warning the other day. Opened Facebook and boom, there it is on the home page. Please read this. Warning. This is from Facebook. You posted an item that violated our terms of use, and this item has been removed. Now, thus far, I can't figure out what the item is. I'm not aware of something being removed. You posted an item that violated our terms of use, and this item has been removed. Among other things, content that is hateful, threatening, or obscene is not allowed, nor is content that attacks an individual or group. Continued misuse of Facebook's features could result in your account being disabled. If you have any questions or concerns, please visit our help center. And then it says, I acknowledge I've read this information, which I didn't click off. But I did write back when I got it probably just goes in some trash bin, saying I've never posted anything that is hateful, threatening, or obscene, or attacks an individual or a group. Now, it's remarkable. You can find whole websites like, you know, I Hate Israel, you know, Israel bashing websites, and I'm sure scores of other websites, or Facebook pages, I should say, attacking specific groups. And then things that are certainly obscene. I'm not going around Facebook looking for them, but you're going to tell me they're not there? They don't have obscene Facebook pages? So this is remarkable, but not unexpected. People are going to do what they can to censor our freedom of speech. We've talked about it. We've warned. Don't come back to me in a year and say, it's too late. It's not too late if we stand up and do what's right. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. A couple of family activist colleagues, Linda Harvey and Lori Higgins, posted some articles this week, one on the American Thinker and another on the website of the Illinois Family Institute, dealing with children's education, dealing with what's happening in schools. And the articles were quite disturbing and actually addressed some things that I had been thinking about writing. So I'm in the midst of writing an article. The tentative title is Sex Ed Classes and the Rape of Our Children's Innocence. And if anything points to the extreme need for Jesus' revolution in the society, beginning in the church, again, the key to the world being changed is the church being changed. The greatest problem in America is not so much the presence of darkness, it is the absence of light. That's where we have to shine. That's where we ourselves have to be light. That's where we ourselves have to deeply encounter and walk with the Lord in such a way that we can swim against the tide of this world and go against the grain of this world and lift up Jesus in an increasingly godless and even anti-God society. So my question again, do some sex ed classes amount to a rape of our children's innocence? Or in cases where that statement would not apply or seems too extreme, do they at least condone immorality? What's your take on that? 866-34-TRUTH. Before getting to the calls, I start the article by asking this question. Did you hear about New York City's comprehensive drug education program for all students in middle school and high school? The teachers inform the kids that abstaining from drug use is best, but since it's impossible to stop them from doing drugs, the teachers give out cards that list the most common drugs, explaining which are the most dangerous. They also distribute needles to kids who are involved in shooting drugs to help them avoid getting contaminated needles, thereby reducing their chances of contracting or passing on communicable diseases. So I haven't heard about this. I mean, it sounds almost criminal. Okay. I made it up. I made the whole thing up. But I made it up to illustrate a point, namely that much of the current sex ed curricula in our schools borders on criminal. And in many ways, it's just as irresponsible as my fictitious scenario. So let me give you some examples of what's happening in our schools. And look, we need comprehensive radical change. We don't need a Band-Aid. We don't just need another nice radio program. We don't just need another nice sermon. We need comprehensive radical change. October of this year, New York City announced an aggressive, comprehensive, and quite graphic curriculum. And I've talked about this on the air, and in fact, we've given you places you can go to address this in the New York area. We're going to talk about some other parts of the country as well. But I want to expand on what we've shared and further alert you. In October of this year, New York City announced an aggressive, comprehensive, and quite graphic curriculum that would consist of one full semester of sex education in sixth or seventh grade, meaning beginning with kids as young as 11, and again in ninth and 10th grade. But the age of consent in New York is 17. This means that these schools, along with thousands of other schools throughout the nation, are giving kids practical instructions on having sex, even though it's illegal for them to do something. Have you thought about that? Well, you can't stop them from doing it, but it's illegal. Now, if the analogy I used about drug use doesn't work for you because drug use is illegal even when you're older, well, how about the schools teaching 12-year-olds about responsible drinking of alcohol? Since later in life it will be legal for them to do so, but right now it's illegal, but we know they're going to do it anyway. I mean, how would you feel about that? Why is it different with teaching about sex? I mean, it can even be argued that on some level these schools fail to do everything in their power to prevent statutory rape. Since in New York, for example, it's second-degree rape for anyone age 18 or older to engage in sexual intercourse with someone under age 15. And that is certainly what is happening with many of these kids. Either way, the activities are illicit, be they consensual acts between 13-year-olds or consensual acts between an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old. So how can the schools teach anything other than abstinence? Think about it. The fact is, many of our schools are doing anything but that. We know that lots of young people get drunk and use drugs, yet the schools don't teach them about safe drunk use and responsible drunkenness. Why, then, are we teaching our children about, quote, safe sex when they're 12 years old and 14 years old, as opposed to doing everything that we can to teach them to be morality? You say, well, it's not the role of the school to teach morality. Oh, it's the role of the school to condone or teach immorality? 866-34-TRUTH, Emilio in South Orange, New Jersey. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, hello.
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 You're on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Hello.
All right, tell you what, for whatever reason, you can't hear me. Hey, Andrew, let's make sure that it's not a connection problem on my end, that it was something on Emilio's end there. All right. Just to be sure we don't have an issue. Let me grab one other call, and we'll find out if the issue was on my end or on his end. Our friend Chaplain Viviana, can you hear me there in Brooklyn?
Yes, I can.
All right. Must have
can
been a problem.
Hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Remember
when we talked about this some time back, you called in with some info, but go ahead. We got a break coming up, but at least get started with what's on your mind.
Well, this is so key that right now they're thinking about putting it in the sex ed education in January. And what nycparents.org is trying to get parents to call into the schools and say, I want to opt in to sex ed education that is based on abstinence, that has a proven track record. And right now the Board of Ed is looking at those type of curriculums. So not only prayer, but advocacy will be a very good defense against.
All right, tell you what, I want you to stay on the line, because as a chaplain and as an activist, I want to ask the question, what business do our schools have teaching how to be immoral more safely?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Talking practically, we'll get to some practical thoughts in a little while about why there must be radical upheaval in the society, in the church, and it can only be called a revolution. It can only be called a Jesus revolution. And when we focus on what's happening in our schools and sex ed classes in our schools and the nature of these classes, we're not just talking about a biology class, as you'll see in a moment. We're talking about a radical sex agenda in our kids' schools. We realize how much upheaval has to happen. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. The question I've asked, do some sex ed classes amount to a rape of our children's innocence? Or if that statement's too extreme, do they at least condone immorality? Before I bring Chaplain Viviana back on the phone with me, and then we'll get back to Emilio, I'm not so naive as to think that tons of kids are being exposed to sexual issues 100 different ways every single day, among their peers, their media, online. I'm also not so naive as to think that our schools could not do a better job spending more time pointing them towards morality rather than encouraging, quote, safe sex. So here, if you got kids listening, bring them away from the radio, turn it down for about a minute and a half. The New York Post reported this last month. Some of the workbooks in the new proposed curriculum for New York City schools, which will be implemented beginning in January. Now ask yourself, will this encourage or discourage teen and preteen sex? Some of the workbooks have these assignments. High school students go to stores and jot down condom brands, prices, and features such as lubrication. Teens research a route from school to a clinic that provides birth control and STD tests and write down its confidentiality policy. Kids ages 11 and 12 sort risk cards to rate the safety of various activities, including intercourse using a condom and an oil-based lubricant, mutual masturbation, French kissing, oral sex, anal sex. Teens are referred to resources such as Columbia University's website Go Ask Alice, which explores topics like doggy style and other positions, sadomasochistic sex play, phone sex, oral sex with braces, fetishes, porn stars, vibrators, and bestiality. I read it a little bit more quickly to avoid reading some of this. No, this is why I say there has to be a revolution. I'm talking about a Jesus revolution, because things have gone so far and have degenerated so far for so long that just, things will get better. That's not going to happen on its own. So, Chaplain Viviana, two questions for you. First, do the schools have any business, any moral authority, any spiritual authority, any governmental authority, any real authority, aside from the fact that they can, to be teaching these things to our school children? That's first question. Second question, to everyone in the greater New York area, what can they do about this?
Okay, as far as the moral authority, most definitely not. What I find is because we are the abortion capital of the nation, and there are a lot of younger students experimenting with sex, they are using that to say, well, we have to teach them how to do it safer. Our argument is not give them the how-to, but give them a why not. And that is what they need to be focused on, because they're taking away parental responsibility and teaching them different things than they're being taught in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And what we can do about it, definitely continue to call the chancellor and the mayor, and go to your parent-teacher association, also these parent advocates, and forcefully say, I want an option to opt in to abstinence-based programs, which we just found out are in two of the boroughs. So they've already been taught at some of the schools.
Yeah, and we're talking about a whole semester for kids as young as 11. Hey, thank you, as always, for weighing in. I appreciate it. Stand strong. The darker it is, the more our light can shine and be needed. All right, let's go back to Emilio in South Orange, New Jersey. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can.
All right. Yes. What's on your mind?
Well, when I initially called, I didn't quite – it wasn't as clear as to limitations. There have to mm-hmm. be limitations. I agree. I agree that there should be sex education, but only on an anatomical level, biology, so forth, so that mm-hmm. the children understand the consequences. You know, I was just thinking, we dress, we cover ourselves, we wear underclothing, and we wear pants and so forth for a reason, and that's not to expose ourselves. Some of the education is paramount to really just exposing ourselves, and there just has to be a limit to it. There should be an opt-out, but our children have to be educated. They have to understand. I think I am Christian, but proper use of contraceptive is certainly, in my mind, more important than the risk. We can't let the children be at such risk. They should have.
All right, so,
be educated. They should be able to protect themselves.
Okay, so Emilio, just a question for you. And I know we're talking about kids' lives. I know that these are controversial issues, and I absolutely understand where you're coming from and saying, hey, if they're going to do it anyway and they're not going to learn elsewhere, then the schools need to teach them. I understand that philosophy. They're also doing drugs. They're also getting drunk. And in many cases, it's leading to death and to other serious complications. Why aren't we also teaching them safe drug use and safe alcohol use in the school? If we're going to teach them safe sex, why aren't we teaching them safe drug use and safe alcohol use?
You know, can I answer it? Let me just tell you about something that happened in my own home. When my stepson was in the Boy Scouts, and he was actually put out for having a girly book, some magazine, Playboy, whatever it was.
Hey, tell you what, I want to hear the story. We're up against a break. Can you hold on about 2 minutes? All right,
sure.
Stay right there, and we'll get back to you. Sharon, Joanne, stay with us. We'll be getting to your calls next on the other side of the break. Friends, please go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, if you haven't before. We have hundreds of hours of free resources waiting for you that'll stir your heart. There's a whole section just on Jesus Revolution. Messages you can listen to, articles you can read, things that'll stir you, that'll minister you, that'll strengthen you, that'll help you, that'll equip you. Please take advantage of that. It's free and waiting for you. May I encourage every one of you listening to order a special resource we have that helps every one of us deal with the issue of sin, how to be holy, how to overcome sin, what's the difference between holiness and legalism. It's price cheap to start. They're only $20 for a 12-hour teaching series. It's just $10, plus we'll pay the postage. This is on a CD for your computer MP3 player. Helps to Holiness, 12-hour teaching. Call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. You can order online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the line of fire. 1-800-278-9978. Friends, now is not the time for Jesus Revolution. When will that time be?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on the line of fire. I am hoping and praying that my heart, which burns to see Jesus' revolution beginning in the church and then spreading into the society, I'm praying and hoping that that heart that burns in me will also be burning in you. It's Wednesday, which is our day to focus on the world, moral and cultural issues here on the line of fire. And I am getting into the urgent needs in our society by talking about some of the sex ed classes that are being taught in our children's schools that are, have been introduced in New York City. And yeah, it's true. It's true that the Department of Education still encourages abstinence as the best choice. But child adolescent psychiatrist Miriam Grossman said, look, kids are being told to either abstain or use condoms, that both are responsible, healthy choices. Yeah, abstinence is best, but if not, then use of condoms. And she says, look, it points out that, that the textbooks use minimize the dangers that pregnancy can still occur with condom use and that viruses such as herpes and HPV live on body parts not covered by a condom. And, oh, okay. Centers for Disease Control in 2008 found, this is painful to read, 1 in 4 teenage girls has a sexually transmitted disease. And in some cases, it is lifelong. Which means that at best, the schools are teaching the students how to have less risky sex, similar to playing Russian roulette with less bullets. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to Emilio, you're speaking as a father. You wanted to share something that happened before the break. We didn't get to it. Your son was in the Boy Scouts and was put out for having a girly magazine. So go ahead.
So when his mother approached me about it, I asked her, well, where was the magazine? And she said, well, he had the magazine hidden outside with he and his friends, one of his friends had and so forth. The thing that I was, and I said to her, well, I'm really not that concerned about it because children are going to do these sorts of things. The thing that really concerned me was the fact that he had enough respect to hide it and be ashamed of it. There had to be some shame related to it. He didn't bring it into the home. He snuck away. He did what he had to do, what he wanted to do. But there was shame involved. I think the problem is when the shame is gone. I think that, you know, we have to be careful. People are going to sin. We have to love the sinner, hate the sin, but people are going to sin. It doesn't mean that we have to give up, and I'm not advocating that, but life is what's important, and as long as there's life, there's hope. So education of the children, in my view, is important that they understand how to educate, that they are educated as it relates to drug use and alcohol, because as long as there's life, there's a way back.
And all right, so you educate them, though. Yeah, so just to jump in, and I appreciate the whole issue of shame and recognizing something's wrong. That's a key to moving in the right direction. I've told students in our ministry school that messed up and then had to go through a period of restoration and then come back into the school. I said, look, I would rather someone came in and said to me, I blew it. I've sinned. I downloaded internet porn. I'm ashamed of myself. I've repented before the Lord. I want to work in my life to make sure the doors are shut from this happening again. I would rather someone came and said that. Obviously, you don't want to hear that at all. But I'd rather they said that than that they said, hey, you know, I watch R-rated movies every day with nudity and with profanity and with even sexual violence and stuff. And, you know, it's fine. It doesn't faze me at all. I'd rather that if they did something wrong, even more wrong, that they recognize the guilt of it. So yes, Emilio, let's teach in our schools the shameful nature of these things, the destructive nature of these things, and then recognize the schools are not the place to fix the problem. There needs to be a revolution. Oh, you hear the music saying it. In the church, that affects the world. So these things become a distant memory. We will be back.
Flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So I asked this question on Facebook. Do some sex ed classes amount to a rape of our children's innocence? Or if that statement is too extreme, meeting in certain settings with certain kids, do the classes at least condone immorality? I just saw a note here from a young man who I knew when he was, well, before he was born. Luke posted this comment: my experience with those classes in school was horrid. There is no chance I will allow my children to go through something similar. 866-34-TRUTH. Joanne in Bethesda, Maryland, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, thank you for having me. I've been listening, and I'm outraged. I know we live in a sex-crazed world, and our children are bombarded with sexual images every day. And if you're Christian or secular or whatever you are, you should be bothered by this if you love your children, and you should be teaching them at home, not expecting teachers to teach your children about sex education. When we send our children to school, we trust the teachers to teach them math, reading, history, science. When did they decide that teaching innocent children about sex was a good idea? Do they want to demonstrate this too? Where do we draw the line here? And why aren't parents outraged? And why are they trusting teachers to teach their children sex education? Last year, there was a paper sent home to me telling me that they were going to teach my son in school. And I had a choice whether to sign and say that I wanted them to teach it or not. And I said, no, I absolutely do not want you teaching my son sex education in school. And my husband, you know, it caused a big fight between us. And he thought it was, you know, it was fine. And, well, I actually lost that battle, and my son was taught in school. He came home every day. It was really upsetting and disturbing what he was going through. And I'm outraged. And I have a daughter who's 10 years old, and she'll be taught next year, and I'm not going to let her be taught. I've spoken to my husband about it, and he's finally decided that he's on my side on this. It's not healthy.
Yeah, Joanne, obviously you're speaking for many moms and for many parents. And, of course, for some the alternative has been homeschooling. For some the alternative has been Christian schools. But that's not an alternative for everyone. Not everyone
that's
is able
right.
to do that. And that's some people don't feel called to do that. And as much as many would see it differently, they feel that they should have their kids in a setting like that, at least as they're getting older, in a public school setting. Either way, we have to be proactive. We have to be proactive by getting involved in the schools and talking to the schools and getting involved on every level that we can. In fact, on my website, aqueerthing.com, which is the website for A Queer Thing Happened to America, so aqueerthing.com, even though we're focusing there on homosexual-related issues, we're dealing with a lot of things just having to do with schools. There's a list of practical things that people can do at aqueerthing.com with links to many other practical websites like TrueTolerance.org, a Focus on the Family website that gives a lot of practical information for what parents can do in terms of their kids' education. But we have to be outraged, and then we have to say, okay, things need to change radically. 866-34-TRUTH. Jimmy in New York City, I understand you're a public school teacher. Thank you so much for calling in.
How are you, Dr. Brown? I'm a big fan, and I've been listening for a while, and it's a great honor to speak with you. How are you?
Oh, thank you, sir. It's a great honor to have you on the air with us as a public school teacher in New York. Thanks for calling. Yeah, give me your what grade do you teach, Jimmy?
I teach in a high school.
Okay. Yeah, tell me about this.
I don't want to say the name, and I don't want to say the borough, but I just want to defend teachers just a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that I teach sex education or any of that, but I want you to realize that the kids are coming with so much baggage. I have kids who spend more time playing violent video games and watching R-rated movies than they do reading a book. So we come,
Understood.
We have kids whose view, whose worldview is so distorted and so skewed that somebody's got to teach them something for their own safety.
Right. So,
here's
the question.
For you, though, it's in the school that I'm in. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Just question. Then, by all means, I want to hear the good news. You know, I never look at this. It's interesting you brought up the teachers, and I have to be more conscious of this as I speak. I never look at this as the teacher's fault. I look at this as the administration's fault or the government's fault, whoever it is that's setting this curriculum in place. And then teachers, in a sense, are often victims as well. Now, some of them totally go along with it and are into it. But I look at the teachers as victims on a certain level here as well because of what they're being.
What about the parents who are letting their kids wear whatever they want, who are letting play whatever video games? And then these are the kids who come into our schools.
Right. So here's the thing then. If the schools are going to address these things, right, because look, I got saved in 71. The sexual revolution was well in place through the 60s by the time I got saved. And I remember the way kids were coming to school dressed then. And I remember how much teen sex was taking place with kids and knowing folks at, 13 losing their virginity. This was late 60s, early 70s. So I'm not so naive.
We're contemporaries. But yeah, it is a completely different story in a high school nowadays than when we were in high school.
Right. So
I would even go as far as to say that certain boys are afraid of certain girls because of the sexuality they put out there.
Right. So the question is then, that being the case, where the innocence has been long lost. Some of them haven't been innocent since they've been 7 years old in terms of what they've been exposed to. And you're absolutely right, from the violent and sexually charged video games to what they're getting online, to the sexting that's taking place, to all these other things. To me, then the school has to have a constant role of trying to work against this, as opposed to saying, hey, that's just that's reality in the schools, that's reality in the culture. We just have to accept it and, show them good use of condoms and the various sexual acts, which is more risky than others. That's my issue with it. By all means, I understand what we're dealing with in the amount of abortions, say, in New York City. So that's the question. If we're going to teach anything, why not do our best to teach what's wrong and what's destructive and what these behaviors lead to, as opposed to almost minimizing that and just telling them how to do it more safely? We don't do that with drugs. We don't show them with violence. If you're going to get into a fight, and don't hit them like this because you could kill them. Hit them like this, you'd only hurt them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Dr. Brown, I agree with you. I just wish that there were more classes geared toward responsible parenting so that we didn't have to deal with some of the issues in the schools that we have to deal with. And just
that's
my last thought, in this city of New York, you need a license to keep a dog. But anyone can have a child, and as long as you're not beating him or starving him, you're okay. That's the fundamental problem, that people treat their pets with more respect and dignity than are treating their kids.
Yeah, and look, we know a lot of the parents grew up in rough environments, and you got a lot of single parents listening, so we're not throwing stones on people. We're just saying that the problems are so deep, we need a comprehensive Jesus revolution. We need radical changes throughout our society, and Band-Aid solutions won't do. Oh, you had one bit of good news you wanted to share, though, so what was that?
Right next to the table, where we have a big bowl of condoms and personal lubricants to distribute to the kids. One of the kids.
This is a table that's just out somewhere?
There's a table in the hallway where all the kids congregate, where anyone can grab a condom or personal lubricant. One of the kids placed a stack of Gideon Bibles.
Wow.
And what's amazing is how some people were outraged, not by the condoms, but by the Gideons. God bless you.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. Was that last comment a bit of an eye-opener there for some, that you just got a basket there, sitting there, and kids can just walk up and take their condoms, lubricants for them, and someone put Bibles there? They're outraged? Oh, my. Oh, my. Dr. LaBoy from Methuen, Massachusetts, former school superintendent, what's your perspective?
Well, thank you for taking my call, and I've been listening carefully. And the first time I called, but of course you're speaking something that's dear and close to my heart. I served as deputy superintendent of schools in the city of New York, and then also served as a former city superintendent in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And the family living sex ed curriculum is an interesting. First of all, policymakers make the policy. Superintendents and administrators and all the people in between, we're held hostage by these policies. And I want to also very clearly establish that, contrary to what people think, 90% of Christian families send their children to public schools. They can't afford private schools. Some of them just don't have the ability to afford either a Christian or a private school. So there is a responsibility that we have as to how we bear in as Christians. And, you know, I remember many battles I had to fight where there was a gay and lesbian task force that took me on. And often we have to stand in the middle of darkness. You know, a lot of Christians that I know throw a lot of stones at the darkness. They talk about how bad schools are.
Yeah.
And for many of us who are in the system, have been in the system, the challenge is how do we put the light on? How do we stand and make a difference? And I was often taken on, call a traditionalist, call a fundamentalist.
Let me jump in. Please stay with us through the break. It'll be a very short break. I want you to come back on, and I want to ask two questions. One, how bad is it in the schools? Give us a few anecdotes. And two, what can parents do? We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to go right back to Dr. LeBoy, former school superintendent in New York, now living in Massachusetts. And everything you're saying is so critically important. That's why I constantly say that the greatest problem in America so much is not the presence of darkness, but the absence of light. And I point to the darkness to stir our hearts to be the light. But as you know, it's sometimes easier said than done, and sometimes we don't practically know what to do. But, sir, if you could just give us in a few seconds an overview of what it's actually like in the school, say in the high schools in a place like New York where you were superintendent, because many parents still don't get it. And then give us some practical things that parents can actually do.
You know, one of the things that often gets missed in these conversations is that there are very advocate groups within the system and outside the system that bear in on the system. So those, whether it's the Gay Lesbian Task Force or any other advocacy group looking for gay and lesbian rights, family limited sex ed advocates, these folks visit, go to school board meetings, get behind the mic. One of the real painful realities that I had as I served as a city superintendent of school was the lack of involvement from the body of Christ, the Church of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know, I remember very vividly in one instance where we were having a discussion around the promotion of the gay and lesbian task force within the school system at the high school as a club. And I had advocated and I had asked the local pastors and the ministerial association to come and stand with us. And painfully so, my colleague, Dr. Brown, it was really painful. The absence of their voice. They did not even show up.
And it would have made a big difference if they were there.
Absolutely. And I think that's fundamentally what's getting lost in these conversations as we speak about schools or any other institutions that are corrupt and have lost their ways. How do we as Christians, myself, my individual responsibility and our collective responsibility. And I think that's a real problem in this country, that at times, and painfully so, the body of Christ, the voice of the church, is absent in the midst of these discussions and policies.
So they can get involved by going to school board meetings. They can get involved by going to teacher meetings. They can get involved by meeting with local teachers. They can get involved in being on the school board itself, those who are elected
Absolutely.
People. No reason
Absolutely,
why
you know, in the last district I served, our school board meetings were twice a month. We had over 40 churches in the community that I serve. Could you imagine if 20 of those churches, half of them, every other week would say, with five of their members or six of their members or their pastoral team would come and sit at a school board meeting and observe and look at us in the eye and hold us accountable to what's being done. And when they're not in agreement, get behind the mic and be a voice. It would have been a powerful agent for transformation, as small as that could be. That's the things that we can be doing.
Yeah. By the way, do you have a copy of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America?
No, I don't. I don't have it.
All right. Tell you what, I want to put you on hold, and I want to send you a free copy just to read and to even look at what's Amen. Happening here. I'd love to hear back from you. But thank you for being a voice and for reminding us. Look, I said at the beginning of the broadcast, friends, together we can make a difference. Amen. Every voice makes a difference. And these are our kids we're talking about. Yes, it begins in the home, but it also continues in the school environment. Thanks, sir, for calling in. I appreciate it. So, Andrew, get Dr. LeBoy's info, and we'll send him a copy of A Queer Thing Happened to America. Better that he emphasized what we can do than reminded us of how horrific things often are in the schools. We've been hearing a lot about that already. Sharon in Washington, D.C., thanks for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I was just thinking, there's a sociological concept that's called risk compensation. And what that means is that when the perception of the risk of a certain behavior is low, people will actually engage in riskier behavior because their perception of the risk is low. And an example of that is playgrounds. Playgrounds are safer than ever, and yet children are actually breaking arms and legs more frequently because they don't see the risk involved in, you know, these quote-unquote safe playgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a lot of what's happening with sex ed, is that even though schools may technically say, well, yeah, there's a 1% risk or 2% risk of birth control failing or the condom breaking, all that they see is 1% or 2%. They don't see that the overall numbers of people who are engaging in these behaviors, and let's be honest, even if teenagers are using condoms, they're not using them every single time. They're not taking their birth control at the exact same time every single day.
Right, and, so, and what about the larger question of the impact on these kids by just being sexually active so early in life?
Absolutely.
In other words, even if they didn't get an STD, and even if the girls didn't get pregnant and the boys didn't father a kid out of wedlock, there's a lot of other impact on their lives that takes place. And like I said, I've been harping on through the show, we know the kids use drugs, but we don't teach them about safer drug use in the schools. We know they get drunk. We don't teach them about responsible drunkenness. And yet,
absolutely,
here we have a New York City school teacher telling us about, you got a basket right in a hallway, and kids can just come by and take condoms and lubricants. If that doesn't speak of the need for a radical cultural revolution, which has to start with the church, nothing
Dr. Brown,
does.
I'm 26 years old, so I'm only 5 minutes out of high school myself, and I have seen these effects in my peers every single day. I see their marriages fall apart for things that they did when they were 13, 14, 15 years old. I mean,
How so?
Just the effects that early sexual involvement has on their psychological development. I mean, these are girls who can't commit to a single guy, or who think that, well, if he has sex with me, he must really love me, and we're going to get married. And it all starts when they're these young teenage girls. And, I mean, I consider it a miracle by God that I was able to wait for my husband and that he was able to wait for me.
Yeah, thank God for that. I just need to jump in. The fact that you're calling in at 26, I'm 56, that you're calling in and talking about this as a 26-year-old, is, look, I've taught students sometimes fresh out of high school, you know, 18, 19-year-old college kids, and they talk about how radically things have changed in their own lifetime. My friend Rabbi Shmuley, who's written a lot about family and kosher sex and those kind of things, he talks about how many people there are in their 20s now that are sexually inactive because they got burnt out to sex through their exposure to all kinds of promiscuity and pornography and so on. And again, there are consequences one way or another. But Sharon, thank God for your testimony. Stand strong. And I am believing that God is going to intervene, that things are so severe that there must be intervention. But that will come as we cry out to God. Another reminder, my website, AskDrBrown.org, is chock full of free resources. Go there, AskDrBrown.org, click on the online resources and dive in. If you can sow into our ministry and help us become a monthly supporter, if you believe in what we're doing, want to help us spread Jesus' revolution, you can do it online or by calling 800-278-9978, 800-278-9978. Get our special resource, 12 hours of teaching on holiness, practical living in the Lord, just $10 postage paid. My bottom line today: if nothing will awaken us in our own lives, how about the lives of our children? If nothing will awaken us in terms of what's happening out there, how about what's happening with our own families, with our own kids? The time for Jesus' revolution is now. Well, you often hear me talk about a Jesus revolution here on the Line of Fire. What are some of the essential components necessary to see a real Jesus revolution in the church and in the world?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You might say to me, what is all this talk about revolution, Jesus revolution, radical change? What are you talking about? My family's doing just fine. We love the Lord. Our kids love the Lord. We're blessed. We're witnessing in our community. We have awesome church services. The Lord's moving in our church. In fact, we're growing. What in the world are you talking about? Why do we need revolution? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Open your eyes, my friend. Look beyond the confines of your own home, if your own home indeed is blessed. Look beyond the confines of perhaps even your own local church, if your own local church is blessed. Look in the lives of tens of millions of our school-age children in America today. Look in our classrooms. Look at the media and ask yourself, who could have ever imagined a day like today? As David Jeremiah has recently written, I never thought I'd see the day. The first hour today, friends, I began by talking about sex ed curriculum in our children's schools, and I never got away from it. I never got on to the next point about practical steps towards Jesus revolution. And I want to continue for a few minutes to talk about this. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Do the sex ed classes condone a rape of our children's innocence, or where they are not innocent, where they're coming into schools anything but innocent? Are these classes at the very least teaching or condoning immorality? Online, you can weigh in on our Facebook page, where we've also posted a number of relevant articles. Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown. Okay, check this out. Check this out. We got calls from a wide range of listeners in the first hour, from a chaplain on the front lines who regularly calls into the program when we deal with social issues in New York, to a high school teacher in New York City, to a former school superintendent from New York. And the high school teacher mentioned, just in passing, that there's a basket in the hallway. There's a table in the hallway on which are condoms and lubricants that the kids can just take as they need. Yes, just a table in the hallway. He's not making this up. And one kid put a stack of Bibles, Gideon's Bibles, on the table. And there was an outrage in the school over the Bibles. If that doesn't tell you that we need a Jesus revolution, nothing will tell you that we need it. What do I mean? I mean that social band-aids won't do. I mean that the problems are deeper than any political or social solution can provide. And I mean that the church, and look, I'm in ministry. I've been ordained for decades. I've been preaching since 1973. I'm not a political leader. I'm a leader in the body, a spiritual leader. If I address political, social issues, it's from a spiritual vantage point. Let me say this as a leader in the body, to my fellow pastors, to my fellow leaders, to my fellow teachers, preachers. I'm not a pastor, but you know what I'm saying. To my fellow leaders, more of the same is only going to produce more of the same. We are on a downward trend. We are in a negative cycle. More of the same is only going to produce more of the same. We must be imploring the Lord for radical, dramatic, sweeping change in the church, beginning with each of us individually. We come back. I want to take some of your calls about the sex ed issue, 866-34-TRUTH, and perhaps share with you some of the most shocking news you have ever heard in your life, even if you're 90, especially if you're 90.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And I'm just looking at some of the interaction of our boys in the Winston-Salem studio who engineer and take calls. And you guys are in your 20s. Andrew, you're looking forward to 25. And Joey, you're still, how old are you now, Joey? 28. All right. It's my bride's birthday today. November 30th is her birthday. Thank you. I will pass on your birthday greetings to her, to Nancy. But Nancy and I are both in our mid-50s. And the world was messed up when we were in our teen years. As society took some dramatic shifts. The world has always been messed up in certain respects. But look, from 1960 to 2000, teen suicide doubled. Probably higher, actually, but at least doubled. Divorce doubled. That's why I knew it was more. Divorce doubled. Teen suicide tripled. Reported violent crime went up 4 times. A prison population went up 5 times. People living together outside of wedlock went up 6 times. Children born out of wedlock went up 6 times. People living together outside of wedlock went up 7 times. Here and there, you'll get a moderation. Here and there, things will drop off a little bit. But the shift is still quite dramatic. And nowhere do we see this more than in our kids' schools. I want to share something with you from Massachusetts in a moment. 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. But first, I want to get some of your calls. If you went through some of these sex ed classes, if you've got kids that are in schools where these things are taught, what's going on? What's your experience been? And look, we know that kids do drugs, and we know that kids get drunk. Do we have classes that show them, okay, here's the proper way to use a needle if you're going to use it? They shouldn't use it, but if you do, here. And we're giving out needles instead of condoms. How much more outrageous is that? Or we'll give out certain drugs to make sure they don't do the really bad drugs. You know, we know that ecstasy is worse than pot. You know, so they can get pot at the school at a discount or free. I mean, how much more outrageous is that than that they can, in some schools, like we just talked about in New York, there's a table, and on the table are condoms and lubricants. Kids just pick them up as needed. Forget parental consent. Oh, I'm going to talk about this in elementary schools in a moment. Friends, we can make a difference if we will take hold of the Lord in fervent prayer and look to Him and then determine that our lives are going to go against the grain of the society and stand for Jesus. We can absolutely make a difference. It is our inaction that is one of the great causes of the crisis in morality in our society today. Cynthia in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you so much for having me. A lot of the people who have been on right before me have had a lot of good points, but on the condoms in school, I wanted to tell you that I'm from Texas. I'm from Houston. I'm back here now. I've lived in many states. But my sister is just 10 years older than me, and in the same school area, a district away from where I went to high school, they used to pass out condoms to her when she was in high school in Texas.
What age was that?
That was in the 80s that they did that, and that was in high school. She was a freshman at the time. She was 14, 15. And she got pregnant in high school and went to the guidance counselor, and they told her it wasn't any of her mom's business what she was doing and if she was pregnant or whatever she decided to do with the baby. So then we had a shift in Texas that all of a sudden abstinence became the only thing that they taught. And I, just being 10 years younger than her, by the time I got into school a few districts over, it was, they showed you the images and they showed you the graphic things of what could happen if you engage in these activities, and they showed you what could happen to your body, and they would tell you the statistics about different things, but they pushed mostly abstinence to the core. Well, in my home, obviously being the youngest of 6 children and in a home where, I had teen mothers of my sisters and things like that, the attitude was, you know, it's something we don't talk about. It's something we don't deal with. When they had to sign the waiver for sex education, they told me, don't have sex. And that was all they said. They never said, because this, because that. They never had that dialogue. So I think the dialogue is important.
It has to start in the home. And then the school should enforce it. And if the home is failing, then the school should just be an additional barrier of resistance to immorality, as opposed to say, hey, if you're going to do it, this is just the better way to do it, and your parents don't have to know about it.
And I agree with that to a point, because I'm in school now, going for education. That's my passion. That's what I want to do. And because I think that there's not enough good teachers out there. I think there needs to be more people that actually care about society to teach our society. But that's another topic. But I think it's a trifle effect. I think it's not only schools that have a responsibility in the Balance Act, because you have to realize there are some parents that aren't inactive in their children's life at all. And you need someone there to tell them the reality of life. But it's also the parents that need to have that balance at home and tell them, look, this is what life is really like, and this is why you don't do these things. And
absolutely.
But you also have a society, you also have a trifold of the media. I think that more, like one of your other people that was on earlier said that if every Christian church would come forward, and if every person that really was an devout Christian would say, look, these things are unacceptable in the schools, then voices would be heard. Well, I think it extends further than the schools. If we all stood up and said, look, the things that we're seeing on TV are completely unacceptable. If you look at most sitcoms now, sexual immorality is completely fine. They talk about who's doing who this week and who's doing what next week, and it's perfectly acceptable to have sex before they're married.
Yeah, and
these
with a few gay characters always mixed in as well. Cynthia, there's no question. It's quite comprehensive. It's what happens with peers. It's what happens in the home. It's what happens in the schools, and then massively, pervasively, what happens in the media. And there's a simple thing that we can do, and I've said this for years. If believers would simply stop watching unclean things, if believers would stop downloading pornography, if believers would stop watching ungodly shows, if believers would simply turn the TV off or not go to the movies or not rent the download the video, whatever it is, if believers would stop doing this, it would put a lot of these ungodly organizations, shows, businesses out of business. Absolutely, Cynthia. That's why we talk about the larger need for Jesus revolution. I'm with you 100%. And where does it start? It starts in the church. It's not going to start in the public school. It's not going to start in the media. It starts with us. And as we live differently, of course, if a quarter of us did this, Cynthia, society would be radically changed. Thanks so much for calling in. Those just tuning in and saying, what was she talking about earlier, callers? Remember, we're on an hour in other parts of the country before coming on. You can always catch both hours online at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. They're put online a few hours after the show, and you can also subscribe by podcast for free, although your donations are massively appreciated. Joe in Brooklyn, New York, thanks also for holding over from the first hour. What's in your mind, sir?
You're welcome, Dr. Brown. To get into what you were saying about the schools and stuff, people have to realize that parents have been basically, by the law, been basically psychologically and physically neutered from having hands and raising their own kids. Because I'm stuck in a divorce thing now where I had a judge harangue me, a female judge, about discussing abortion with my 11-year-old child when he brought it up to me.
Okay, did you call in some weeks back and share this with us?
I don't know, I might.
Yeah, because if it wasn't you, it was someone else with a very similar situation.
But it's amazing that a state court can turn around and tell you not to speak to your child about it, but meanwhile, in the fifth and sixth grade, that they can turn around and hand you stuff. All I can see is these children going out, smoking pot, or getting drunk, and then taking these cards with all these different risks and use them sort of like a spin-the-bottle game.
Yeah, so we're talking about in the New York City curriculum the new curriculum that's being introduced for those that aren't familiar with it. You have these risk cards that talk about different sexual acts and which are more risky than other.
Right. So instead of the old spin the bottle game that was popular when you and I, because we're the same age, was basically going around at the time. You know, when you got into a group, boys and girls, I could see them playing. Well, hey, well, let's try this. So like truth or dare. And it's amazing, but like I said, at the state court level, a father cannot have a heart-to-heart talk with his son about abortion if the child asks about abortion. I got harangued.
What did the judge specifically tell you? Because you are right. Their kids, maybe a girl gets pregnant as young as 11, 12 years old. It can happen in some cases. There are schools where she could get pregnant, where the boy could get a condom, where the parents don't know the school has given the boy a condom, where the parents don't know the girl has gotten pregnant. They can tell her where to get an abortion. They never hear about it. This is insanity. This is outrageous.
It was
and you're saying the judge told you?
A blanket enunciation. Mr. Daly, do not discuss abortion with an 11-year-old. So, but it's fine when you can go to a woman's ambulatory surgery center, which is a fine name for abortion clinic. I said, and see these people standing outside with blown-up pictures of fetal...
Yeah. Hey, Joe, listen, we're out of time. We've got a break here. May God give you grace in the midst of the divorce situation you're in. May God bring restoration and grace within your family. And please hear us, friends. This is reality.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today as we talk about how we must have a radical revolution in the culture. Not the type that we're not talking about the Christian version of Occupy Wall Street. We're trying to make, say, something that I agree with far more than Occupy Wall Street, the Occupy movements, say take the Tea Party and say this is our vehicle for national change. I'm talking about something ultimately that is following the principles and methods of Jesus. I criticize Tea Party, by the way. It's not to get political at all. It's to make a non-political statement. I'm not talking about a political revolution. I'm not talking about, God forbid, a violent revolution. I'm talking about, how do I say it? In a way that's different than I've said it 1,000 times, radical, dramatic, sweeping change. It's the difference between you go to the doctor every year, and he says, you know, I noticed that just some of your cholesterol levels and blood pressure, just the tiniest bit elevated from where they've been, and I think maybe you've put on like 5 pounds from where you've been. So, you know, just keep an eye on that. It's the difference between that and going to the doctor. And the doctor's saying, unless you make radical lifestyle changes, you'll be dead in 6 months. The good news is, with the Lord, there's hope. The good news is, if we will recognize the urgency of the hour, we can make a difference. And I'm going to give you some practical ways that will work itself out. Those that want to get into this in depth can read my 2 books, Revolution, The Call to Holy War, and Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call to Radical Change. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? I've talked about this last year, but I want to bring it up again because I believe many of you have never heard about this. June 2010, the Provincetown, Massachusetts School Board voted unanimously to begin distributing condoms to elementary school children upon the student's request. I'm not making this up. Beginning in first grade and without parental knowledge or consent. What possible use could a 6-year-old have for a condom? So there was a public outcry, including from the governor, who was anything but a conservative prude. After a public outcry, the district agreed to consider restricting condom distribution to grades 5 and up, meaning to kids as young as 10, but still without parental consent or knowledge. Although, quote, the school nurse is to give counseling and abstinence information to a student prior to handing out the condom, although still without parental knowledge or consent. Condoms being distributed to elementary school students? This is actually happening in the United States of America. And I ask the question again, is this very different from handing out clean needles to kids who are shooting drugs? Safe needles? Good word there, Andrew. Safe needles as opposed to dirty ones? Now, I want to point something out about criminality. As for the question of criminality, the age of consent in Massachusetts is 16. Under certain circumstances, it's 18. If someone was, quote, chased, and an older person, forget what the exact age difference is, if there is an age difference, but an older person basically seduced them out of their chaste life, or the person, say, was clergy or a teacher, something like that, then the age of consent would be 18 rather than 16. There's some ambiguity, obviously, in how that's constituted. But let's just use the age of consent, Massachusetts, 16. So sexlaws.org, the website, answered a question posed by a 16-year-old boy who was having sex with his 13-year-old girlfriend. And the website answered him, explained that any sexual conduct with a child age 13 is a very serious matter in Massachusetts, whether you are a minor or an adult. So doesn't it mean that the school's condom distribution is contributing to criminal behavior, not to mention to dangerous and harmful behavior? Are you with me? Let's think about this again. If children under the age of consent, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, have access to, from the school, free condoms, so the school understands these kids are having sex, right? They're either having sex with other kids their age, which is they're both under the age of consent. How can the school condone that, encourage that, be complicit with it? How can the school not try to stop that? Or many of them are having sex with, say, older teens. How many 13-year-old girls are having sex with 17, 18-year-old boyfriends or 14-year-old girls with 19-year-old boyfriends or whatever? So in most cases, that is a level of statutory rape. In most states, maybe every state, I haven't looked, but the states I was checking in, it is. So the school understands that something illicit is happening, either between, say, 13-year-olds or between a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old, whatever the case would be. Something illicit is taking place, and the school is complicit with something illicit. And this is not an isolated instance. Oh, the elementary school thing is more rare, but comprehensive sex ed beginning in middle schools and then in high schools, and we're not even talking about gay activist curricula, we're just talking about general sex ed curricula. This is rampant. You say, well, Jesus is coming any minute. It'd be wonderful if Jesus came today, but the fact is, I've been waiting for his return the 40 years I've been saved, and some of you have been waiting for his return since before I was saved, and some of you had parents and great-parents and great-great-grandparents waiting for his return, and he hasn't returned yet. Here we are. To quote again my colleague, Dr. Josh Peters, who directs our missions organization here, I don't know if this is the last generation, but it is our last generation. Here we are with an opportunity to do good. Here we are with an opportunity to bring about change. Can I ask you if there's anything stopping you from really going after God earnestly? Can I ask you if there's anything stopping you from shutting off unclean entertainment and from turning off things that are polluting and for seeking God instead, or even just putting aside wasted time to get with God and to say, Lord, change me. Let the revival, let the revolution start in me. Change me so I can go change my world. What if we prayed that every day to start our day? Lord, touch me so I can go and touch my community. Lord, change me so I can go and change my generation. Lord, impact me so I can impact other lives. What if we live with that mentality? What could happen? Just a reminder, visit our website, AskDrBrown.org. It is chock full of hundreds of hours of free resources that would stir your heart. Let's go to our online library, dive into the resources, click on Revival Revolution. Your life will be radically impacted. And get the important resource we're making available at super low price this week, just $10, a CD for your computer MP3 player with 12 hours of teaching. Yeah, 12 hours of teaching on how to live a holy life. Difference between holiness, legalism, practical life-changing teaching. Call it 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If you listen to this broadcast with any regularity, you know that the theme of Jesus' revolution is dear to me. Why do I say you know it? Well, because you hear it. You hear it sung at the beginning of the show and in the breaks in the show. And the revolution we're talking about is God's people saying enough is enough with the status quo. Enough is enough with the darkness being so dark. Enough is enough with the pervasive backsliding in the church or the compromise in our own lives. It's time for radical, dramatic, sweeping change. It doesn't come through anger. It doesn't come through, as a caller expressed earlier today, it doesn't come through throwing stones at the darkness. It comes through God's people turning to him, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and saying, God, enough is enough. Change has to come. Let it start with me. And that radical revolution starts in our hearts, our lives, and through us, it touches our society. And I brought up an hour and a half ago, start the broadcast, some of what's happening in sex ed classes in New York with a new comprehensive curriculum that has been established, and it is shocking. As I read some of the assignments, I was actually embarrassed to quote them from an article in New York Post because of the nature of some of what was there. I'm putting in an article I'm working on. The tentative title is Sex Ed Classes and the Rape of Our Children's Innocence. You say to me, a lot of these kids are anything but innocent. Oh, I understand that. But here again, we come to my question. We know kids are doing drugs. We know kids are getting high, drinking, getting drunk. We know they're sleeping around. Why is it that we give them condoms in our schools, that we counsel them on abortion and how to avoid sexually transmitted diseases? Why don't we tell them where to get safe needles or maybe make them available for those who are shooting drugs? Why don't we tell them, well, you know, this drug is more dangerous than that drug, so if you're going to do drugs, we recommend this. No, that's criminal. And yet what we're doing with our kids is criminal in another way. And I'm using this to illustrate the need for radical change. And a friend of mine commented to me over a decade ago, dear friend from England, Derek Brown. He made this comment as he was sitting with our fire leaders when we were still living in Pensacola and based there. And it led to a theme in my book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change. He said to me, before there can be a revolution in society, there has to be a revolution in the church. And that means upheaval. That means change is more radical than some of us realize or want or desire. But to be true to God, to be true to his word, to see the things he's promised and he longs to do in our midst, to see those come to pass, to experience the goodness and the glory and the presence and the greatness of God so that it makes the world jealous for what we have. To see that is going to take breaking with the status quo, because more of the same will only produce more of the same. 866-34-TRUTH. Adam in New York, I want to get to you in one moment because you've taught sex ed in school. I want to talk to you about that. I understand, again, that a lot of these kids are coming to school and they may be more savvy to the things in the world or the sexual issues at 12 than their parents are at 35. And they may know their way around the porn on the internet certainly better than their grandparents, unless the grandparents have fallen into sin and perversion. I'm not saying that all these kids are pristine and innocent. I'm saying that plenty of them are hearing things in school contrary to what they hear at home. Okay? They're not just learning biology. They're hearing things at school contrary to what they hear at home. And the schools are either encouraging or condoning immorality, and in some cases even illicit behavior, sex among minors. That's what I'm talking about. Change has to come. It starts with us. I want to give you some practical things where change begins in the church and from there spreads to the world. 866-34-TRUTH.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, just if you've got kids listening, turn the radio down or get the kids away just for 30 seconds. Some of the new curriculum being introduced in New York City. Kids age 11 and 12 sort risk cards to rate the safety of various activities, including intercourse using a condom and an oil-based lubricant, mutual masturbation, French kissing, oral sex, and anal sex. 11 and 12-year-olds will sort risk cards. These schools have no business talking to children about these subjects. If the kids are sexually active, let the school serve as a moral base to help the kids go in the right direction. And obviously, parents have to get involved first. Many of the parents are ill-equipped. I understand that, which is why we need a revolution starting in the church and from the church touching the world. I'm sure there's sex ed that's not like this. That's why there's outrage in New York over this. I'm sure there's sex ed that's more biological and factual in nature and that is more heavily abstinence-based, which is the only thing the school should be teaching. It's got no business teaching about safe condom use or what's less risky sexual behavior and so on. 866-34-TRUTH. I will, before this half hour is out, give you a number of very simple things, conceptual things that if they change in the church would impact the world around us. Before I go to the phones, I just checking my email during a break and I saw in junk mail, FBI official notice. They left out the E in notice. So it's FBI official notic. FBI office, get back to us immediately if you don't want us to arrest you and jail you for your own good. Okay. So it's one of the more humorous junk mails I have seen. But as I mentioned at the outset of the first hour, so over an hour and a half ago, I opened up my Facebook account, and this is real from Facebook. Please read this. Warning. You posted an item that violated our terms of use, and this item has been removed, among other things. Content that is hateful, threatening, or obscene is not allowed, nor is content that attacks an individual or group. My parenthetical remark, unless that individual group happens to be moral, conservative, Christian, etc. Or Israel. Attack them. Continued misuse of Facebook's features could result in your account being disabled. If you have any questions or concerns, please visit our help center, which was utterly useless. When I did check to see how I could tell them, hey, there are people that are trying to get me off Facebook because they don't like what I'm posting. I wrote back, although I'm sure it's just in some trash bin somewhere. I've never posted anything that would be any of those. So what are you talking about? It looks like people are coming against me. And by the way, one colleague did point me to a page on Facebook, which is put together by homosexual activists. And specifically, it flags something that they take an issue with, and they all flag it. And then you think, wow, there's a real problem here. And Facebook says, okay, that's hateful or obscene. You have to pull it. Just reminding you that there are people trying to silence us. Just reminding you. The shame, the real shame is that those of us who have a voice, who have an opportunity to speak, often don't. When nobody's silencing us, we don't speak. I was on the phone yesterday with a dear brother who had called into the show last week, a former leader, Southern Baptist Convention, and still a respected leader among Southern Baptists and many other churches and Christians nationwide. And he said to me, he'd made a comment to his wife. I may not have it precisely right, but it was brilliant. He said, we preachers have an amazing ability to almost say something. Come on, isn't that the truth? Well, let's say it. If we're going to say it, let's say it. Let's say it plainly, clearly, to help people, not to hurt them, to help them, because we must have awakening. We must have awakening. And I believe God will send awakening as we turn to him and say, let the awakening begin with me. 866-34-TRUTH. Adam in New York City, thanks for calling. What's your view on this whole sex ed in school thing?
I don't think we should be teaching it junior high and elementary, but in high school kids, I do. I'm 34. My life story, my testimony is very similar to the gentleman that you have in Alaska that you interviewed over the air.
a couple weeks back. But the some of the stuff that we teach in the schools are, well, first, it's people that are HIV or impacted by somebody in the family that is HIV positive or AIDS infected. And we go into the school and we teach the number of people in which communities, what are the impacts they're having on our communities. And a large number of people infected with HIV and AIDS are Hispanic and Black.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach how to put condoms on, what condoms don't rip, which condoms are good, where can you get the condoms, how to talk to your mate about using a condom.
All right, so Adam, I've just got a question for you. I've just got a question for you. Obviously, being there in New York, being involved in teaching these things, you're passionate about saving lives. You see the reality. You see that this kid's going to do this anyway. You see that this is happening among the students. It's pervasive. What I'm talking about might sound like pie-in-the-sky idealism. And you're thinking, hey, everything's messed up. At least we can save some lives here because we know what they're doing. So here's my question for you, though, Adam. And so I respect your – I'm saying it, putting what you're saying in the best light and respecting your love for these kids. We know they're doing drugs. Why don't we give them – those that are shooting drugs, why don't we give them needles? Because that's another way that they could get infected, STDs and HIV and other things. We know that some drugs are not as dangerous as others. Why don't we sit down with these kids and give them drug education and say, okay, now, if you need needles, we'd rather you don't do it, but if you need them, we're going to make them available to you, and they're clean, and please don't share them with your partner. And we recommend pot or hash or whatever drugs are called today rather than crack cocaine or ecstasy. Or why aren't we doing that? Wouldn't that be outrageous to do that?
We do teach that where the needle exchange places are in the city.
I mean in a high school. I'm talking about in a high school.
Yeah. So that is being taught. That's part of the sex ed is the drug activity too, the drug issue too, and alcoholism and where to get clean needles at these syringe exchanges in New York. But I also, I've seen a Christian idea that worked. I worked with the organization called Inner Urban Life Source Connection. The lady, Sister Belli, she worked with kids. She would do a Bible study around 3, 4, 5 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Projects in the project building in the, they had an area, a family area. It was just an open area. And kids, they just would come in by the numbers, and we were able to teach them the gospel. I think that idea needs to be expanded because we are able to take advantage and say, able to use that space to teach kids. She had an excellent idea.
Right. So get involved.
I'd like to see more Christians get involved with that organization, because then we're able to spread outside the project building.
Absolutely. It would make a massive difference. And boy, I mean, you've enlightened us in terms of teaching in some of the schools. Things are so rough that they're teaching the kids about responsible drug use. Wow. And needle exchanges. Remarkable. Adam, thanks for weighing in. And yes, the gospel is the only solution. But again, Adam, thanks for weighing in. What do you think of that? Dan in Des Moines, Iowa. All right, we lost Dan. We lost Dan very quickly, actually. But I want to reiterate something that came up in a conversation, just about an hour ago as I look at the clock, from a former school superintendent from New York, now lives in Massachusetts. And he said there were policy issues that would take that there were council meetings every other week, and policy issues about what would happen in the schools would be discussed. And he was in a place where there are several dozen churches. I think he said something like 40 churches right over there. He said, if every other week each church just asked five people from their church to show up at a meeting. So it could well be, especially if some of these churches are sizable, that that's talking about coming maybe once in a year if you divided it up between everybody. Just five people from each different church showed up at the meeting. It would have made a massive difference. We can. We can get involved. We can make a difference. And above all, we can bring the gospel to the society.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, everything we do here on the Line of Fire broadcast is strategic. The opening theme song is strategic from Aaron Kreider's song Shake the Nations, which calls for a Jesus revolution, obviously one that will spread to the ends of the earth and bring the knowledge of God to hurting and lost people. The music that fades us in, as you hear my dear friend Lendell Cooley singing Send the Fire, the old William Booth song that was put to new music for a new generation. Send the Fire, God of Elijah, hear our cry, send the fire. That's not just sound. That's a constant prayer. That's a constant cry. We need the fire of God afresh. We, in many cases, are colder than we realize, in many cases more compromised than we realize, in many cases our cities are more lost than we realize. The answer, then, is not just a new church program. The answer, then, is not just the latest Bible study, although whatever we can do to bring health and strength little by little, one life at a time, one day at a time, we do it. It's one reason we constantly make resources available to you is just to sow into you, to sow into you, to we make as many available for free as we can and others at reduced price to seriously, it's not a hype thing to say, okay, however we can help, nurture, strengthen, equip, stir, awaken. But beyond that, there must be radical change. Three simple things, three simple steps to revolution in the church. And by revolution in the church, I don't mean going to leaders and saying, we hate you. We're getting rid of you. Out with you. No, I don't mean that. In fact, if it's based in rebellion, it's not from above. Let me say that again. If it's based in rebellion, it's not from above. If it does not have honor and respect for authority, even in the midst of differences, it's not from above. Three simple things that would be so helpful for us. Number one, the church is not a building. The church is not a building. Yes, it's our terminology. And it's crept into our Bible translations for centuries. William Tyndale, when he saw the word ecclesia in the New Testament, did not translate it with church, but with congregation, because that's what the word means, the congregation, the assembly. Jesus said, I will build my congregation, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. But there was a tradition, and the King James translators preferred it, and translators through the centuries, English translations have preferred it. They use the word church. The problem is church is also used for the physical building. If you read a German Bible, you won't find the word Kirche, church, in it. You'll find Gemeinde, the community, the assembly, the congregation, when you see that word ecclesia. But in English, we have the same word, church for the people and church for the building. In Spanish, you have iglesia. It's that from ecclesia, very similar in Italian, the people and the building. You say, why is that an issue? Because it causes us to forget that it is not that we go to church, but that we are the church. We are the congregation. We are Messiah's assembly. It is, yes, I believe in corporate gatherings. I believe in home gatherings, small gatherings, large gatherings, gather as much as we can and then spread out what we receive to those in need around us. Absolutely. But the idea that the church is a building leads to lots of wrong thinking. It puts the emphasis on a service in a given place. What if through persecution and other and other factors, we could not meet together in a building in a central place for 6 months, we would start to realize much more we have to be the church. We have to be the church. We have to be the church. I'm just planting seeds for thought. Even in terminology, I always want to refer to a church building because it's part of our culture, as opposed to a church, the church being the people, the building being the place. And the and often we have a nice building, we think we succeeded, we've done something, we have a nice service, we think it's affecting the world. Often it's not affecting anybody outside the four walls of that lovely building. Number one, the church is not a building. Number two, the body is not an audience. We often have the idea of the preacher performing from the pulpit or the worship team performing at the front of the assembly, and we give them a great hand for a great performance. The body is not an audience. The preacher is not a performer. The body is not an audience. In fact, the clergy-laity distinction is unbiblical. All of us are priests. The idea that God has raised up leaders and puts leaders in the body is very, very important. Leaders have an important role in teaching and shepherding, in guiding and helping and nurturing and building up. There is a reason that God put in the body apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers. They have a very important role for good. But there's no clergy-laity distinction. We are all equally members of the Messiah, members of the body. We are all equally branches of the vine. We are all equally priests to God. There is no spiritual hierarchy. There is no higher or lower in God. There's no caste system or class system, which means, well, I'm just a layperson. No, 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 there is no such thing as just a layperson. You may not be a qualified theologian. You may not be a qualified, gifted teacher. You may not be qualified to lead, but you're not just a lay person. You're a member of the body of Christ. You are a branch of the vine. You are a priest to God. Oh, if we could grasp this, then it wouldn't be 5% of the church doing 95% of the work. And then thirdly, so first, the church is not a building. Secondly, the body is not an audience. Thirdly, every believer is called to be a disciple. Go back and read the Gospels with that in mind. When Jesus calls his disciples, it's us. When he gives the qualifications for a disciple in, say, Luke 14, beginning of verse 25, which are so radical. And unless we leave everything, forsake everything, we can't be his disciple. He doesn't say, I won't let you. He says, you can't be. It won't work. Can't happen. And that means a heart fully given over to him, and then fully given over to him, we can be better spouses, we can be better parents, we can serve our community. But there first must be the total, absolute surrender to him to be one of his disciples. Every believer is called to be a disciple. Wow, that's saying something. That is saying something. I lay this out in my book, Revolution in the Church. We're not featuring that today, but you can get it online. You can get it at AskDrBrown.org. But friends, if we could just recognize, time for revolution. Revolution must be here. Next Wednesday, I'm going to bring a very special teaching, planning on it as I'm scheduled to be in India for my 18th trip. Lessons from Treblinka, from the Holocaust. Oh, don't want to miss it. Put it down. In fact, every show next week should be special impacting. Let the revolution start with me. Let the revival start with me. Let that be our prayer. And then do what you know how to do. Walk in the light that you have. A very practical resource that'll really help you walk in light, walk in holiness, walk in purity, overcome sin, break with destructive habits, not get caught up in legalism. 12 hours of teaching on holiness called Go and Sin No More, just $10 postage paid. So it's ridiculously inexpensive. So as many of you as possible can get it. Call today to order 1-800-278-9978. If you believe in what we're doing, stand with us. Become a monthly torchbearer. Add in a donation to help with this work so we can reach more and more people. 1-800-278-9978 or go online to AskDrBrown.org. Friends, my bottom line, it is not time to be throwing stones at the darkness. It is not time to be cursing the darkness. It is not time to be condemning those who are already condemned. It is time to arise and shine.